trial of his dad. He's convinced that if Conroy Geralt ever learns how hard it is for him to control the weather magic, the bastard'll challenge him as unfit. And he would too. Geralt couldn't care less about a schism if it means sticking the crown on his own head after. But if Gar truly isn't strong enough... He jerked away. We don't know that. Look what's happened to him in the last 2 months. First he gets his magic, then he's nearly killed, getting thrown from a runaway carriage, and losing his family on top of it. There ain't been a weather worker in history who's come to the throne like that. It's a bloody miracle he can do it at all. He slumped again, anger spent. Unbidden, her hand drifted to rest on the nape of his neck. He made a pleased little sound deep in his throat and closed his eyes. She let her hand stay where it was, thinking hard. Another schism. That would surely usher in the final days foretold by prophecy. Indeed, for a time the Circle in Trevoil's time had thought they were the ones to face the fire. The idea made sense, fitted all too neatly with her visions of death and destruction, a battle between mages for the crown, for the control of Baal's Wall, would swiftly see the magical balances of the kingdom upset. And Asher would be in the middle of it, standing at Gar's right hand as he fought to keep control, to stay king. Yes, it all made horrible sense. What she couldn't see was how Asher was supposed to stop it from happening. Not with Ulken magic, which was a soft and subtle thing, cajoling and persuasive, not when he hadn't even discovered its existence within himself yet. The not knowing was killing her. What about a hint, Javale? She silently pleaded. Just a little hint. No reply, and none truly expected. She'd have to learn the truth of things another way. Since Gar seemed at the heart of the mystery, and Asher was close to Gar, then she'd have to get closer to Asher. In the name of duty. In the service of prophecy. Yes, yes, she answered the critical voice within. And because I want to. Beside her, Asher stirred. I should go, he muttered. Why, is there a weather working tonight? No, but he was all set to create his family's effigies today. He'll take it hard. I should. Leave him be, she advised. Let him grieve without an audience. He pressed his fingers to his eyes. Aye. Maybe. But you don't want me cluttering up your living room. I'll... She drifted her hand from his nape to his shoulder, almost caressing. Did I say that? Dark colour flushed his weathered skin, and in his face she saw the deepening, the maturing, of all the feelings she'd seen there that night outside the Goose when he'd asked her to leave Dorana with him and go gallivanting off to Resthaven. Uncertainly, he said, I thought, you need to ease your mind, Asher. Like it or not, you aren't a fisherman anymore. You're a man of power and responsibility, a solver of problems, even unlikely ones drowning in piss. Gar's not the only one who needs a friend to look out for him. Stay. Rest. Forget about Gar's problems and Justice Hall, and all the other worries weighing you down. Stay. Your company's no hardship to me. She watched hope flare in his eyes, felt guilt and a wicked flaring of her own, and smothered them both. Some of the strain eased from his face. He smiled, and her heart turned over. All right, he said. I'll stay, but only for an hour. In the end, he stayed 2 hours and took his leave in a far better mood than when he'd arrived. He hadn't chased her away. If anything, she seemed closer to him now than she'd ever been before, as though something inside her had surrendered to the feelings she fought so hard to deny. He didn't know why, and he didn't much care. "She's mine, she's mine, and soon I'll hear her say it." He jogged back to the tower, invigorated, made it all the way up to his suite, had his fingers on the door handle, damn it, when a peremptory voice called out, "Asher, a moment, if you please." Swallowing a groan, he turned. Darren stood on the landing below him, a frown pulling his face into tight lines of concern. "Darren, it's late," he said, looking down through the staircase railings. "Whatever it is, can't it wait till morning? I'm fair bloody knackered. What are you still doing here anyways? Nix'll have your guts for garters if you keel over again after all his pills and potions. He'll say you're making him look bad."
"I'm not interested in Partha Nix's reputation," replied Darren. "And if it's all the same to you, I'd rather not stand here bellowing like a fishmonger in the markets. Kindly come down to my office, where we can converse like civilized men."
Forestalling argument, he disappeared. Swallowing another groan, Asher trudged downstairs. Just to prove a point, he didn't actually enter Darren's office, but leaned against the door jamb instead.
"You must be feeling poorly, calling me civilized."
Darren looked up from behind his desk.
"I was being polite. No need to bother on my account."
"Clearly not," said Darren snippily. "Now do stop being obstreperous, at least for 5 minutes. Or is that too much to ask?"
Despite his crushing weariness, Asher grinned.
"Probably."
Then, to avoid a tongue-lashing, he did as he was asked, kicked the door shut behind him and dropped into the nearest chair.
"Well?"
Darren steepled his fingers against his chin.
"I'm worried about His Majesty."
He could have screamed.
"Gar's fine." "He is not fine," said Darren.
"He needs a master magician."
"He's got one."
"The one he's got is broken. He needs a new one."
"He doesn't want a new one."
"This isn't about what he wants, Asher. It's about what's best for him."
Asher got up and started pacing, his heels thumping the carpet as though he were killing cockroaches. All the lovely lingering glow of pleasure from Daphne's company was vanished. Now he felt prickled and badgered and shoved in a corner, hot and bothered and bullied.
"In case you hadn't noticed, Darren, I ain't a Doranan. I can't snap my magic fingers and make everything all right."
"Perhaps not, but you can talk to him. Use your dubious influence. Make him see he must."
"Don't you think I've tried?"
"Then try harder."
"How? What do you want me to do, Darren? Lock him in a room alone with Willa till he begs for mercy and promises anything to be let out again?"
Darren slapped his desk.
"If that's what it takes, yes! Asher, are you blind? Have you seen how dreadful he's looking?"
"Of course I bloody have."
"Then do something! Don't you understand? You're the only person he'll listen to. In short, I fear you are his only hope."
"I don't want to be his only bloody hope."
"And that makes two of us,"
Darren shouted back, surging to his feet.
"But what we want is irrelevant. All that matters is our king."
Asher threw up his hands.
All right, I'll do it. Anything to shut you up. Bow's mercy, you bang away like a bloody woodpecker, don't you?"
Darren's lips curved in a mocking smile. Slowly, he sat again.
"Given you possess all the sensitivity of a tree stump, I thought it the wisest tactic."
"Oh, ha ha,"
he muttered, and threw himself back in the chair. A fresh headache was building behind his eyes, thunderous as a storm. Now Darren's smile was mordantly amused.
"I hear you're to preside in judgment at Justice Hall. Extraordinary. I must say, Baal has a strange sense of humour."
"You're telling me?"
"Such an undertaking will involve a great deal of preparation. You'll require assistance."
"I got assistance."
Darren pulled a disapproving face.
"As a legal expert, I'm sure Mistress Daphne makes a very fine bookseller."
He felt his face heat. I never said it was Daphne.
You didn't have to. And while I'm sure she performs her duties as Assistant Ulkin Administrator quite adequately, clearly this is a very different situation. Therefore, in the interests of not disgracing His Majesty, I shall coach you in the duties and protocols expected of you in the matter of Glossbottle and the Dyer's Guild.
No, no,
he added, lifting a hand. There's no need to thank me.
Trust me, Asher said grimly. I weren't about to.
Have you set a date for the hearing?
Not yet.
Best to make it sooner rather than later. This ridiculous Glossbottle business has dragged on for far too long, said Darren, with a severe sniff. We can begin work tomorrow morning, after you've spoken with the King. Yes?
He glared. Darren smiled. Still glaring, he stumped out of the old crow's office and slammed the door as hard as he could behind him. The loud bang of timber against timber didn't relieve his feelings or help his headache in the slightest. He tried to speak to Gar first thing the next morning, but Gar wasn't in his apartment suite, or the solar, or anywhere in the tower. Mildly disconcerted, he wandered out to the stables, where he found Balladair eating breakfast, which meant the King wasn't out for an early ride. So where was he?
What's amiss? Said Matt behind him.
He rearranged his expression and turned. Nout, just stretching my legs. Matt was grinning, pulling on his gloves, ready for riding.
I hear your little meeting with Glossbottle in the Dyer's Guild nearly came to blows. Make sure you save me a seat in Justice Hall, eh? I wouldn't want to miss a sight of you in your crimson robes.
Sink me bloody sideways! Who told you?
It was a talk of the goose last night. If you weren't famous before, my friend, you will be after. An Ulkin sitting in judgment at Justice Hall? You're a man of hidden talents, Asher.
I'm a man of many headaches, is what I am. I'll see you later, Matt. I got some business to attend to. As he left the stable yard, frowning, a nasty thought occurred. Yesterday, Gar had gone to his family's crypt to create the effigies, but that wouldn't have taken all day and night. Not unless something had gone horribly wrong. Brisk walking turned into a fast jog, then an all-out run as he headed for House Torvig's private burial vault. He was panting, streaming sweat by the time he reached it. Glimfire still burned in the passageways. Not a good sign. He took four wrong turns before finally stumbling into the small glimlit room Gar had selected to house the coffins. He found his King sprawled face down on the flagstoned floor.
Gar!
There was a pulse, praise Baal, and slow, measured breathing. Gar's skin was dry, cold, his eyes gently closed. Even as Asher poked and prodded and shouted his name, he stirred, coughed, woke and stared around him, confused.
Asher?
Baal bloody save me, Asher muttered, and helped him to sit up.
Are you all right? What happened? Don't tell me you decided to sleep in here, 'cause that's taking reverence for the dead, just the...
No, no, said Gar, and pressed a hand to his head. I was moulding the effigies and... I can't remember. There was pain and a bright light and... His expression changed, confusion to caution to sudden fear. Help me stand. With a grunt, Asher hauled him to his feet. Gar swayed for a moment, finding his balance, then looked at the three coffins, sucked in a great gasp of air and blanched fish-belly white.
Baal bloody save me, Asher said again, and this time it was a prayer.
Serene, peaceful, exquisite, the faces of the Queen and her daughter slept side by side, a song and its echo. But Bourne's face was a monstrosity. On the left side it was perfect, an immaculate representation of the man. The right side, though, was twisted, melted. The stone eye in its socket had boiled and burst, dribbling marble tears down the sunken cheek. It was as though the effigy were made of wax, not stone, and some mad magician had breathed on it with fire. What happened? What went wrong?
I don't know, Gar whispered. It's all a jumble.
Baal have mercy, Asher. His face!
Asher stepped between Gar and the dead king's coffin.
Don't look at it. Just listen.
This happens 'cause you're coming apart at the seams, Gar. Nix's bloody potion ain't fixing you. It's just been keeping you glued together. Except now even that ain't working. And folk are starting to notice.
What folk? What are you talking about?
Darren's been on at me. He can see how poorly you're looking, and so can everyone else.
Gar frowned.
Don't. Not in here.
Where then? Gar, it's time you came to your senses. Derm's no closer to getting out of bed today than he was 3 weeks ago, and a blind man can see you need a master magician now.
Must I make it a royal command? I said I won't discuss it.
You have to.
Heart thudding, Asher shoved his fists in his pockets.
You're so bloody worried about betraying Derm. What about him?
He stepped aside, revealing Bourne's disfigured face.
If you work yourself unconscious, or worse, into a fit that kills you this time, you'll be given this kingdom gift-wrapped to Conroy Geralt. And if that ain't a betrayal of your dad, I don't know what is.
For a moment, he thought Gar was going to hit him. Then fury faded, and Gar turned away.
I know. You need help. With the weather working, your magic. You need someone who understands what it means to be Dorinan. I can hold your coat for you while you make it rain, and mop you up with cloths and water afterwards, but I can't tell you how to control your power.
I know that too, said Gar,
and turned round again. He looked shattered. I know I've been postponing the inevitable, and I know it has to stop. He looked again at his father's ruined effigy and flinched. This is a sign from Baal, I think. A warning.
Then take the hint.
Gar nodded.
I will. Tomorrow. Today I must rest. There's weather working tonight, and I need to regain my strength. If what happened here should happen while I'm in the midst of a working...
He shuddered.
Fine,
said Asher, and started backing towards the chamber door. Tomorrow. And don't think I won't hold you to it. That bloody Darren'll never let me hear the end of it otherwise.
Pale again, and somber, Gar followed.
As he passed his father's coffin, he paused, bent low, and pressed his lips to the cold, marred stone of his brow.
I'm sorry, Father. I'll return soon and make this right. I promise.
Course you will, said Asher, waiting in the doorway.
It only happens 'cause you're tired.
Yes, said Gar, still staring at his father's face.
I expect so. Something in the way he said it prickled Asher's skin. He took a step back into the chamber.
Gar?
I'm fine, it's just...
Gar, don't.
Magic ain't like the spotty blisters. You don't catch it, then get over it. Even I know that much. If you start thinking like that...
Like what?
Like maybe... Maybe...
He couldn't say it. If the words remained unspoken... Gar's lips twisted.
Like maybe my magic is failing?
Damn. No! That's daft. How can magic fail? It's magic. I mean, you're the historian, Gar. Has there ever been a case of a Dorinan's magic failing? Running out? Drying up?
Slowly, Gar shook his head. No. But then there's never been a case of it manifesting at such a late age, either.
So now you're not just studying history, you're making it,
he said, itching to shake sense into him, shake out fear and doubt.
You're tired, Gar. That's all. For the love of Baal, don't you start looking for things to fret on. We got problems enough as it is.
Gar sighed. You're right. I'm sorry.
I will. Don't be sorry. Just be walking, eh? Some people have got work to do.
That made Gar laugh.
You are so rude.
He grinned, flooded with relief.
I ain't rude. I'm just me.
Yes, you are, said Gar. And praise Baal for it. Chapter 12. After seeing Gar safe and sound to his apartments and narrowly avoiding both Darren and Willa, Asher lost himself in yet another day crammed top to bottom and side to side with meetings, decisions, authority, things he was getting used to, but slowly. He saw Daphne only in passing. She smiled at him, her eyes warm, and his spirits lifted. Telling her his secret was dangerous, but he couldn't be sorry. Nothing would make him regret feeling closer to her. The day ended at last. He ate his dinner down at the Goose, suffering with as much goodwill as he could muster the whooping and hollering and rib-tickling about his upcoming appearance in Justice Hall. Matt's lads promised to fill his boots with manure for good luck. Behind all the joshing and jibing, though, was genuine admiration, a kind of rough-spun awe. He was one of them, one of their own, and yet he was different, not better, just special. The idea made him laugh. Tell that to my brothers. With several hours to go before he was due to meet Gar for weatherworking, he distracted himself playing darts with Matt and a few of Pellin's lads. Hoped Daphne might stop by for a pint, but she didn't show. Just before closing, he paid out the money he'd lost in wagers, said his good nights, and made his circumspect way to the weather chamber. Gar arrived some 10 minutes after he did, brisk and rested and uninviting of personal inquiries. Any crises occur today I should know about? He asked, conjuring pale gold glimfire.
None I couldn't handle.
Darren told me about Glossbottle, Gar said with a sly smile. Don't worry. I'll see you through Justice Hall.
Asher nodded. Appreciate it.
What's on the menu tonight, then?
Rain in the flatlands, snow in the dingles, and the River Tay is overdue for freezing.
So, a long, hard night, then. Wonderful.
Swallowing a sigh, Asher settled himself in the armchair conjured for his comfort and waited for the show to begin. Braced for the coming onslaught, Gar raised his left hand, closed his eyes, murmured a brief prayer and traced the first sigil on the waiting air. The magic ignited, feebly. Asher frowned.
Gar, that was the wrong sigil.
Gar's look would have burned stone.
It was not. You just drew the third sigil for the right hand, not the first for the left.
I did not, he sighed.
I've watched you call rain enough times now that I could teach the incantation in a classroom. That were the wrong sigil, and you didn't walk widdershins.
Asher! He sat back.
Fine. You're the king.
Walking this time, Gar started again, waved his hand through the incorrect sigil, dispelling its energy, and this time drew the proper one.
Tolneck,
he winced.
Luneck. Gar was supposed to say Luneck first.
Gar!
Be silent!
Asher bit his tongue. Breathing heavily, Gar raised his right hand and drew the fifth sigil, not the second. Instead of burning brightly, it hung wraith-like for mere seconds, then faded. On a stifled curse, he tried again, and this time managed the correct sign. Increasingly uneasy, Asher watched Gar stumble through the rainmaking incantation.
This was wrong.
By now the power should be rising, but the atmosphere in the chamber was unstirred. Instead of painting the sigil smoothly on the canvas of waiting air, Gar's fingers clawed the shapes without grace or commitment. All his precision was gone, and with it, his accuracy, his confidence. This working was a mishmash of meaningless gestures, a litany of misremembered words, a travesty. At last, he could bear it no longer. He got to his feet and moved to intercept Gar's disjointed procession, held out his hands and said, rough with compassion, "Stop. Gar, just stop."
"No,"
Gar said, and shoved him aside. Stepping in front of him a second time, he said,
"You ain't rested enough. Leave it. The rain can wait."
"It can't wait. Without the weather magic, the wall will fail."
"In one night..."
Gar dragged a shaking hand down his face. "You'll have to help me."
"What? The words are in here,"
said Gar, rapping his forehead with his fingers.
"And the sigils. But I can't quite see them. Grasp them."
"Me? Help?"
He tried to swallow, but his mouth was too dry.
"With magic? Are you mad?"
Impatient, Gar looked at him.
"You said it yourself. You know the incantations back to front and inside out. Guide me through them. Say the words and draw the sigils so I can copy them."
"You are mad,"
he whispered.
"Weren't you listening?"
Gar's eyes were feverish.
"I can't remember the incantation's proper sequence. If you don't help me, then it won't rain tonight, and that will be all the provocation Conroy needs to challenge my fitness as weather worker. And if I do, and if he finds out, that's my head using the wooden block for a pillow."
"How would he find out?" Asher opened his mouth, closed it, glared.
"I'm not asking you to break Baal's first law," Gar said with quiet intensity. "I'm asking you to help your king."
Shit. Shit. He could just see the look on Daphne's face if he told her about this. "I don't know. Please."
Stomach churning, he took refuge in movement, stamped back and forth across the chamber, anger fueled by resentment. He could feel Gar's eyes on him, his tension and barely controlled fear, echoing in memory a promise to an unwell man. "I'll look after him." He stopped. "All right. I'll do it on one condition." Gar couldn't hide his wild relief.
"Name it."
"First thing in the morning, you go see Nix and tell him you're sickening for something. You drink whatever disgusting muck he puts in your hand, and then you pay a visit to Conroy Geralt and congratulate him on his promotion."
A long silence. A reluctant nod.
"Very well," said Gar.
He looked as though his heart was breaking. Asher didn't care.
"Then let's get this over with, before I come to my bloody senses."
"How do you want to do this?" said Gar, frowning. "Long-winded explanations won't work." He shrugged.
"You ever play a mirror game?"
"When I was 3. You got a better idea, 'cause I'm all ears."
They stood face to face beside the weather map, arms outstretched and fingertips touching. Torn between fear and feeling stupid, Asher closed his eyes.
"You ready?"
"Yes.
When the power ignites, be sure to get out of the way."
He snorted.
"Like I need telling."
Stepping slowly sideways, they began the weatherworking dance. Not exactly meaning to, with his inner eye, Asher saw the flatlands in full sunshine, the rolling hills and the nodding grasses, burdened with tiny birds, tasted the clean tang of open air and heard the curlews crying. Closing his eyes, he commanded from memory the exact sequence of signs that would summon the rain. Then, hesitantly, he raised his left hand. Gar's hand lifted with it. Together they drew a picture in the air. His voice whispered,
"Lunek."
Gar echoed him.
"Walk, walk,
Walk. Raise the right hand. Draw the second sigil. Toll neck. Another echo. Walk. 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 Raise the left hand. Draw the third sigil. It was getting easier somehow. Lunek. Again, the echo. Asher frowned. Was it his imagination, or did his fingers just tingle? No, it was nothing. The blood not getting to his fingertips properly, that was all. Tolnek. Gar cleared his throat. Asher? His voice sounded strange.
Shut up, I'm trying to concentrate, he growled.
What was the next sigil? Oh, aye. Confident now, he drew it. Lunek. A rising breeze trailed hot fingers across his face, and his silk shirt whispered. Deep in his blood, a seething sizzle.
Asher! Gar said urgently. Look!
Sweating, he halted and unclenched his eyelids. Gar was untouched, but blue fire was dancing over his hands and up his arms. Even as he watched, Gar let his fingertips drift away, let his arms fall by his sides, stepped back. But the blue fire kept on dancing.
Sink me bloody sideways,
he choked out, and stumbled away from the map until he hit the wall hard. It was the only thing that stopped him from falling. Silence. The thickened air above the map slowly uncurdled. Asher stared at it.
What was that?
Start the incantation again, said Gar, his voice thin and strained. By yourself this time.
No bloody way.
Please.
No. No more please. No more help. Oh, I'm getting out of here.
He headed for the door, but Gar got there first. Asher, start the incantation again. He was so afraid, he thought he might suffocate.
Get away from the door, Gar, or so help me, I'll knock you on your arse and step over you on my way out.
Asher, I think there's magic in your blood.
No, there ain't!
Gar pointed at the map.
Then how do you explain what just happened? I don't, and neither do you. It didn't happen. I ain't never been here. I'm going home to bed, and I ain't never coming back.
He shoved Gar aside and wrenched wide the chamber door. Gar's cold, unfriendly voice said,
Leave, and I'll have you arrested.
He stopped, couldn't turn round.
You're threatening me?
I'm asking you to stay. I'm telling you we have to learn the truth. Here, now. Don't you understand? If you have power, everything changes.
He felt dizzy.
I don't want it to.
Our personal private desires don't count. Asher, on the night of Timon Spake's death.
He turned.
I don't want to remember that.
There was no colour in Gar's face now. No emotion either. He looked as human as one of those marble effigies in his family crypt.
On that night, he said, relentless, I called Baal's first law stupid and senseless because Olkin couldn't do magic.
But it seems you can. And that explains everything. Why Baal made that law. Why your people must die if you break it. Because there's only room for one race of magicians in this kingdom.
Mine.
That's fine with me.
But not with me.
Don't you understand?
Said Gar, entreating.
We stole more from you than land. We stole your magic. For 600 years your people have been living a lie. One that my people forced upon you somehow.
And do we look like we're suffering because of it?
Asher demanded.
No. Gar, it don't matter. Who cares what happened 600 years ago?
I care. And so should you.
Well, I don't. I ain't you, a romantic in love with the past. I'm a practical man living in the here and now. Let this go, Gar. Pretend it were a dream. If you don't, it'll only end badly for both of us.
I can't, Gar whispered. Please, try the spell again. Perhaps I'm wrong and you don't have magic. Perhaps it was just an odd kind of transference, because our fingers were touching. He nodded.
Fine, that's what it was. Problem solved. Good.
Gar put his arm across the open doorway. But if I'm right, Asha, you say you can forget this, but we both know that it's a lie.
Damn him. Damn everything. Why had he come to this wretched bloody city? Why hadn't he just left well enough alone, stayed in Resthaven and worked something out with his brothers? Or he could have upped stakes and shifted to Rollingcombe. Bibford, Tatler's ear. What had possessed him to abandon his safe life on the coast for this? He had magic inside him? How could that be? It had to be a mistake. Damn it. Gar was right about one thing, the bastard. Until he knew for sure, he'd never get a good night's sleep again. Cursing, terrified, he returned to the weather map. This time he kept his eyes open, felt an odd kind of tugging sensation, drawing his mind and imagination to the map's recreated flatlands. He watched his shaking fingers draw the sigils as a voice he scarcely recognized as his own recited the rain-calling incantation. Watched the sigils burst into fiery life, saw blue flame dance up and down his arms, felt magic's wind rise gently at first, then stronger and stronger till it buffeted him like storm breath racing inland over the open sea. His blood bubbled with an unfamiliar power that remembered the ocean. He couldn't have stopped even if he'd wanted to. Baal save him. He didn't want to. How was this possible? The air above the map began to thicken, darken. The unwanted power he'd raised gave tongue in rumbling thunder and tearing cracks of lightning. He was hot and cold all at once, shaking and utterly still. His body tingled like the kissing of 100 pretty girls. His hair spat sparks, and his fingers and all the world shimmered bright and blue. Then the rain burst forth, and the world washed blue to red in a heartbeat as his blood exploded through the confines of his flesh, poured burning from his eyes, his nose, his mouth, and everywhere he turned there was pain. He fell, screaming. Consciousness receded on a scarlet tide. When it flowed back again, he was propped against the chamber wall. His face was tacky with blood, and Gar was pressing a cold cup to his lips. Drink. It will help. Dazed, confused, he swallowed. Gagged. Then opened his eyes as Nyx's foul concoction burned through the fog in his aching head. Tell me I'm dreaming, he whispered. Tell me I didn't just do that. Gar put down the cup. I wish I could. Humiliatingly, he wanted to whimper. Sink me. That hurt. I know. Yes, he knew, but so what? It was supposed to hurt him. He was Dorinan, the weather worker. I'm a bloody oaken. I'm supposed to get hurt stubbing my toe, not working magic. God, this ain't right. It can't have happened. We have to be dreaming. Gar shook his head. Sorry, it was no dream, he grimaced. A nightmare, perhaps. But, he struggled to sit up. Baal bloody save me. What do I do now? Now? Gar straightened out of his crouch and looked down at him, all emotion buried. Now you drop snow on the dingles and freeze the River Tay. The words stole his breath like a gut punch. I can't. You must. I can't. I...
If you don't, there'll be questions. I can't afford questions, Asha. Not until I've had time to think.
He never knew fear could make a body physically sick. Sweet, sour saliva flooded his mouth, and his belly churned. Now Gar looked almost angry.
This ain't my fault. I never asked for this.
I never said you did. Just finish what you started, Asha.
And then it's finished?
Gar nodded.
Yes, then it's finished.
His body still thrumming with pain, he clambered to his feet and did as he was told. He called the snow, and he froze the river. And when it was done, he was a twitching, blood-spittled heap of unstrung bones on the floor. He felt Gar's hand press his shoulder.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Thank you.
He couldn't have opened his eyes if his life had depended on it. But even with them shut, he could feel the warm golden wash of Baal's wall through the chamber's glass ceiling. The touch of it made him want to vomit.
Go away.
Gar went. Alone at last, he surrendered to tears.
Baal bloody save me. Who am I? What am I? And why did this happen to me?
Damn! Potha Nix cursed explosively. And he was doing so well!
Beside him, young Carol gasped as a writhing derm banged a violent fist to his forehead. The blow reopened an almost healed wound. Blood spattered his hand, his face, the sheets.
Now, damn, that's enough,
Nix grunted, pressing his palms to the Master Magician's heaving shoulders.
Tincture of Ebonard, Carol, quickly, before he breaks his bones a second time.
She obeyed, fumbling a little in her haste. At the door to Derm's chamber crowded the other Pothers on duty, the ones who'd come screaming for help when the Master Magician's convulsions first started. The Ebonard fumes from the cloth Carol pressed to Derm's nose and mouth were taking effect. His thrashing slowed, became more feeble. His eyelids flickered. A crescent of white showed, rolling.
Good girl, said Nix. Now a lozenge of Ebonard and Tantivy. You can administer it. Use a spatula or you'll lose your fingers.
She was an excellent student. Deftly, she slid the wooden stick between Derm's teeth and tucked the dark green drug under his tongue to dissolve. As they waited for the soporific to calm him completely, Nix looked again to the gaggle of Pothers in the doorway.
Well, your duty's done here. Be about your business.
They retreated in silence, but their exchanged glances said it all. Even staunch Carol looked doubtful.
Go, he told her. I'll sit with him till I'm satisfied he'll stay sleeping.
She nodded and withdrew, and he sat there with his fingertips pressed to Derm's erratic pulse, his mouth bitter with the taste of impending failure. He couldn't maintain the charade any longer. This fit had stripped him of all final fading hope. Derm was dying. It was merely a matter of time now, before the Master Magician's weakening will succumbed.
I'm sorry,
he sighed, and patted Derm's slack wrist.
I tried. Please believe me, I tried.
So close to breaking free. Morg feels the drug seep into his prison of blood and bone and cries aloud his fury and despair. Baal's weather magic burns him like a brand. It means the cripple still has his unnatural magic. But how can that be? Gar's artificial powers should have failed him by now. They were explicitly designed to fail.
Thrust into the shadows, Derm the dunghill rooster crows his temporary triumph. Morg snarls at him, revealing all his terrible teeth, and Derm wisely shuts his beak and cowers. Satisfied, Morg bends his mind and will towards victory. He must escape this fleshy cage. He must discover why the cripple's magic still holds sway. He must bring his exile to an end. Let me out! Let me out! Let me out!
Matt felt the change roar through the world like fire. The ferocity of it sat him bolt upright in his bed, shattering sleep, scattering dreams. Heart pounding, he lit his bedside candle and stared around his tiny bedroom. Everything looked exactly the same. There was sweat on his face, stinging his eyes, trickling through his stubble. Dragging up the sheet, he blotted himself dry and waited for his thundering pulse to ease. Was it Asher? Had something happened to him? He couldn't tell. Sight wasn't his gift, and for the first time in his life, he regretted its lack. As always, when he was troubled, he sought solace in his horses. Safety lamps burned throughout the night beside each stable, casting shadows. Overhead, the cold stars shone like chips of living ice, and the wall glowed gold as steadily as ever. He trod across the yard softly, slippers whispering, mindful of every step. His lads were good lads, well trained. They'd wake at the first sign of upset or the sound of unexpected feet crunching gravel. Poor neglected Balladair roused from dozing and chumbled sleepily over his stable door, curved ears flicking. Patting him, petting him, Matt promised to make sure the king rode him more often or else let him go away for a time to the countryside, where a horse could be a horse and kick up his heels at will. Wheeling like rooks disturbed, thoughts and questions crowded his aching head. Something momentous had just occurred. The balance of Lur's magic was changed, upset, disordered. Turned arse over eyeballs, as Asher would say. He frowned, letting Balladair's tidy forelock thread through and through his busy, distracted fingers. Was it Asher behind this change? And if so, did that mean they'd truly reached the end of waiting? In the last year there'd been so much tension, anticipation. He felt as though he'd been holding his breath forever beneath a lowering sky, watching lightning flicker, listening to the thunder roll, expecting it to rain now, now, now. Was this now? Had the first hard raindrops finally fallen? Had the innocent mage lost his innocence at last? Matt! A soft, breathless voice called from the shadows. Matt! Did you feel it? Daphne, as though summoned by his questioning thoughts. He hurried to her, mindful of how clearly voices carried on the cool night air.
What are you doing here?
He whispered, hustling her out of the stable yard proper and into the gardens beyond.
Are you mad?
She was panting, as though she'd run all the way from her apartment to his stables. Even in the palest of moonlight, he could see her wildly shining eyes.
Did you feel it? She said again, her fingernails digging into his arm. Like an explosion of fireworks, 100 times stronger than when I felt him first arrive. Do you know what this means? Asher's power has woken.
So, the final days were upon them at last.
Then it's time to tell him the truth.
She shook her head.
No.
No?
He took hold of her. In his grasp, her shoulders felt so breakable.
Think, Daphne. We might not be the only ones who felt him wake. If the Dorinan learn of him, they'll kill him within the hour and tell everyone he died in his sleep. Then they'll turn on the rest of us. We have to tell him. Tonight. He must have felt it too. He must realise something's changed in him. We have to explain before he does something stupid out of fear or ignorance. What if he reveals himself before we're ready?
Frowning, She held up a silencing hand. Matt felt his heart thud. He knew that look. She was searching within, listening for that small voice that only she could hear, that spoke to Javel's heir and to no one else. These were the times she became a stranger. Her hair was unruly, loosened for bed. It billowed round her sharp face in a soft cloud, made her look younger than her years, and she was hardly old to begin with. "No, we have time yet," she said at last, stirring. He wanted to shake her till her teeth fell out.
"Please, Daphne, please, for once in your life, be guided. He's the innocent mage, this kingdom's only hope. We can't risk him. We can't leave him ignorant any." "I'm Javel's heir," she hissed at him like a cat. "I can do whatever I see fit."
She pointed to the wall, their silent golden witness.
"Does the damn thing look unsteady to you, trembling on the brink of destruction?" "No, which means prophecy is incomplete. I still have time."
"To do what?"
She looked away.
"To convince Asher he can trust me with all his innermost secrets. With this."
He decided to take a risk then.
"You know he's still in love with you."
She wasn't a stupid woman. She heard the silent criticism, the implied accusation. Her jaw tightened, and she folded her arms across her narrow chest.
"Of course. Why else do you think he'll tell me what I need to know?"
100 words, 1,000 protests clamored for release. He beat them back, took another risk, and let his hand return gently to her shoulder.
"Be careful, Daphne. You think you're oh so clever, and in some ways you are. But he's not the only one in love."
He'd shocked her. Her mouth opened, closed, opened. Her sharp eyes dulled with surprise, and all the passionate colour fled from her face.
"My feelings are none of your business, Matt. I'm Javel's heir. I know what I'm doing, and anyway, I don't have any feelings."
Defeated, as always, he shoved his hands in his pockets.
"If you say so."
"I say so. And this, too. Don't question my judgment again."
"All right. If that's what you want."
Her eyes were cold.
"Yes, it's what I want."
He thought she knew herself well enough to understand it was a lie, and that she knew him well enough, too, to realize he had no intention of holding his tongue if he thought he had to speak. This was a matter of saving face, of soothing hurt. She thought she'd kept her love hidden and was angry to discover she was wrong.
"Fine. I'll go back to bed then," he said. "If that's all right with you."
"More than all right," she snapped. "If anything else happens, I'll let you know. Probably."
"Aye, Daphne," he said, walking away. "You do that."
The memory of her pale, furious face chased him into sleep. Worry and dread made sure it wasn't peaceful. Gar walked back to the tower in the dark, without benefit of Glimfire. He was too afraid of what might happen should he attempt its conjuration. His chest felt tight, hooped with iron bands. His palms were sweaty, his eyes hot and dry.
Asher made it rain. Asher made it snow. Asher froze a river. And I couldn't.
Some sound caught in his throat then, a sob or another expression of distress. Breathing was suddenly painful, as though the air had turned to knives. He'd fallen into the habit of visiting his unburied family of a night time, once the public were safely elsewhere. He couldn't face them tonight, not after such a catastrophic failure. Fain would jeer at him and call him names, and his father... His father. He stared at Barl's magnanimous wall, serenely shining in the distance, emblem of his sacred oath, victim of his inadequacy. Sweet lady, blessed Baal, he whispered, dropping to his knees beneath the indifferent sky. Tell me how I failed you. Show me how to make amends. From earliest boyhood, my only desire has been to serve you. Why did you gift me with magic if not to make me your voice in Lur? Why did you take back the gift? Is my service now distasteful? Did I falter? Or did you? Hulz would say the question flirted with blasphemy, and perhaps it did. Too bad. He still wanted, needed, an answer. None came. A different question then. Where does Asher's magic come from? You? Or was it always in him? Is it in all his people? If so, what does it mean? And what should I do about it? If Conroy Geralt ever finds out Asher is a dead man, and perhaps all his people with him, is that what you want? The Ulken dead? Asher dead? Still no answer. A sudden wave of fear and fury drove him to his feet. Well, I won't have it! I won't let you kill him! He shouted to Baal's last lingering presence, her wall, implacable and uncaring. I defy your first law, madam! I defy you! No matter how I came to it, I am Lur's king, and I shall do what I must to protect it from harm. To protect the Ulken from harm. From you, if I have to. Do you hear me, Baal? I would even protect them from you! He returned to the tower, stripped and fell into bed, to dream wildly of flood and fire and women weeping. Exhausted, he woke hours later to daylight and a dreadful understanding that needed nothing so crude as manifested proof. Once more, he was empty. His magic was gone. Chapter 13. Willa had already been hard at work for nearly 3 hours when his prey finally deigned to come into the office. Ever since his arrangement with Lord Geralt, that was how he'd thought of Asher, and of himself as the wily hunter, poised to bring him down. But as prey, damn him, Asher was proving elusive. Hidden in the false bottom of the right-hand drawer in his desk were his notebooks, filled cover to cover with the lout's transgressions. He remembered them all. He'd practically crippled himself these last few weeks, painstakingly listing each and every crime. Just as soon as he could, he was going to pass them along to Lord Geralt. Lord Geralt would find them fascinating reading, he was sure. They'd go a long way to seeing that Asher got his deserved comeuppance, he was certain. Almost certain. Because while they were damning, they weren't precisely treason. What he really needed was to catch Asher in the middle of committing an act so heinous, so treacherous, so clearly illegal that not even his nauseating friendship with the king could save him. It was the only way to save His Majesty. Tragically, though, catching the bastard red-handed was proving harder than he'd anticipated. Asher was slippery and disinclined to let anyone close. He doubted now if his offer of assistance would get him where he needed to be. Perhaps he'd have better luck working on the stupid bookseller. A woman that plain and unapproachable would surely be grateful for the attentions of a well-set-up and influential young man. He did know one thing for certain. If he didn't soon come up with some kind of evidence to seal Asher's fate, Lord Geralt would turn elsewhere for aid. Someone else would be the key to Asher's destruction. Someone else would get the glory. He thought he'd rather die. Some 20 minutes later, Asher finally made an appearance in the office, looking ill and strained and altogether drained of his irritating arrogance and energy. He moved as though his head might topple from his shoulders at any moment, as though every muscle pained him, separately and in chorus. Willa felt his pulse quicken. The bastard had been drinking, to excess, to look as poorly as this, and now here he was, determined to make vitally important decisions that would affect hundreds of lives. Splendid.
Gracious me, he said, unctuously concerned. Are you quite well, Asher? You look positively green.
Asher barely glanced at him, eased himself by inches into the nearest chair and scowled.
When's Darren meeting with the market committee again?
Tomorrow.
Asher grunted.
Make sure I get a copy of last month's figures by end of day, then.
Willa swallowed a scream.
Certainly.
Have you seen Daphne?
I believe she had a meeting with the Midwives Guild this morning. I'm so sorry, I thought you knew.
Asher's expression was filthy.
Midwives Guild. Aye, that's right.
Course I knew.
Liar.
Willa knocked a pen to the floor and dived beneath his desk to retrieve it. When he could trust his face again, he sat up.
Is there anything else I can help you with? Preparations for the upcoming hearing in Justice Hall, perhaps?
Watching the bastard screw his thumb tips into his eye sockets, watching him wince, Willa felt his fingers tighten to crushing point around the pen.
Rude, ignorant, arrogant.
Hurrying footsteps sounded on the staircase outside. Then a junior messenger, pink-cheeked and breathless, appeared in the open doorway and bowed.
Meister Asher, sir. His Majesty's compliments, and you're to join him in the stable-yard. Dressed for riding, he said.
Riding? Said Asher ungraciously, lowering his hands.
Now?
The messenger darted a glance at Willa.
Yes, sir.
Asher cursed under his breath.
Go back and tell him I can't, Toby. Tell him...
Another curse.
Damn it. Tell him I'll be there directly.
Sir!
Squeaked the shocked messenger boy, and fled. With an effort, Willa schooled his face to solicitude.
I'll tell Mistress Daphne you've been called away, sir, shall I? When she returns? And Darren? They'll need to rearrange your appointments.
Rearrange 'em? Snarled Asher, hoisting himself to his feet. For all I care, they can...
He stopped himself, just, favoured Willa with a look of intense dislike, and headed for the door.
Aye, do that.
Willa waited for the sound of his feet on the staircase to fade into silence, then indulged in a gust of silent, excited laughter.
Refusing a royal summons! Was there no end to Asher's arrogance? How perfect for his purpose! And before a witness, too!
Messenger boy's tongues waggled faster than their knobbly little knees did when they ran. This story would be all over Tower and Palace by sundown. Lord Geralt was going to be thrilled! Swearing viciously, Asher yanked off his fine indoor clothes and pulled on his riding leathers, boots, and a second-best shirt.
Meet Gar in the stable-yard? As if he had time for riding! As if he felt well enough with